This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, you're looking awfully green today.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's just the jumper I have on, as they would say in England. It's chilly. It's very chilly here and rainy, and so I have been wearing a fleece all day to try and stay warm.
I thought it was some kind of Green Lantern cosplay, like you guys were going to do the Star Trek Green Lantern crossover comics on Literary Treks or something like that. You were getting into the mood.
Oh, man. Goodness. Well, I would highly recommend that series. Dan and I talked about it, and it's so good. So, if anything, I was in a leprechaun mood today.
Okay.
And I was really upset because we're out of Lucky Charms at the house as well. Oh, okay. So it just, yeah. Anyway,
I can imagine Lucky Charms on Bajor and the special. Like, you remember when we were growing up and they put the rainbows in and they were really special? Mm-hmm. Well, they're probably orbs in certain boxes on Bajor.
Yeah. No. Well, and you know, some of the marshmallows, you know, you might have an orb or an earring or, you know, a bottle of spring wine is one of the, you know.
The earrings would be the ones that break into pieces and fall to the bottom of the
exactly.
bag.
Exactly. So. Yes. There you go.
All right. Well, let's get into our actual episode here today. We are going to do something for the very first time here on The Orb. We're going to steal a page from our sister show, To the Journey. And of course, Standard Orbit has also done this. And we're going to start a series on Essential DS9. So we're going to be going through each season bit by bit over time. And we're going to choose the episodes that are essential to the Deep Space Nine story. Now, these are not necessarily the episodes that we think are the best episodes. And by that, I also mean there may be episodes we think are wonderful episodes, but they're not essential to the story. And these are also not going to be just our favorite episodes, because I know there's at least one in here that I love that I'm not going to keep. So that's how we do this Essential DS9. And we're also each going to have one optional card that we can play along the way for an episode that we think we should maybe keep, maybe not. It's up to you. All right. So we're going to see if Matthew and I agree, disagree, and if we can change each other's minds. How do you think this is going to go, Matthew?
I think it's actually going to go pretty well. I think there's going to be a lot of agreement. I think there will probably be just a couple where we're like, no, but you really need to keep this, and this is why.
Well, let's find out. Let's start with Emissary. I think we know where this one's going. After the Cardassian withdrawal from Bajor, Starfleet sets up shop at the abandoned Terok Nor station to provide protection and assistance to the Bajorans as they transition to self-governance. Benjamin Sisko, a survivor of the Wolf 359 massacre, is assigned to the station, rechristened Deep Space Nine, to oversee the process and help prepare Bajor for admission into the Federation. But the Cardassians aren't going to make it a smooth experience, and the discovery of a stable wormhole complicates matters. All right, Matthew, tell me why this episode is not essential to the DS9 story.
not essential?
Yes. Argue that side.
I don't think I can tell you why it's not essential. Like, it is probably the most essential episode because, as we've talked about so many times, it just sets up everything for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, and it does it really well. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, it, if you watch this and you watch What You Leave Behind, you will feel like you've come full circle. And so, and because of that, it does. I think this makes this the most primary, probably, of all. I don't know if I could say that, but it's pretty primary for the pilot episode. It could be
like
the
of
most
all the series.
Important.
You mean?
Yeah. Pilot episode of any of the Star Trek shows, just because of what it really does set up.
Yeah.
So.
And just the fact that it sets up the series makes it essential, because without this, you would start watching the series and you would wonder, who are these people and how did they get here? So obviously essential.
I mean, you start this show with past prologue and you're going to be like, what the heck?
Right, exactly. And of course, Matthew, we also just talked about Emissary in two separate episodes back to back, the Orb 98 and the Orb 99. So everyone go check those out for details on Emissary. So let's go on to past prologue. A former associate of Kira's arrives on the station with plans to take Bajor off the political map by destroying the wormhole. Meanwhile, the Duras sisters drop by and Bashir discovers that Garrick might be a spy. So Matthew, do you keep past prologue or do you toss past prologue?
I think we keep it. One, because you could never throw away a Garrick episode. And this really sets up that entire relationship with him and Bashir, which is going to become very important to the rest of the series. And I also, I think that this episode does a little bit to further your understanding of Kira and the relationship between her and the Cardassians and all of that. I think the Duras sisters are a little bit of a red herring for the episode. But yes, I think that this does become essential because of really what it is. Like the pilot, it's actually setting up a lot of different things that will play out later on.
Yeah, I agree with it being such an early episode and the fact that we find out a lot about where Kira's loyalties lie. We find out how she feels, how she's torn between her new post and her past. But also, when faced with the prospect of destroying the wormhole, and maybe that would have gotten rid of the Federation, I don't know. You know, she does the right thing for her people, at least in my opinion. So I think it's important for the Kira story. And it is important for Bashir and Garrick, although I don't know, like, if you didn't see them meet here, I think you could still hop in later and figure out what's going on with Bashir and Garrick, and you could still enjoy that story as it unfolds. So for me, that aspect of it isn't purely essential, but it is an important one. I agree with you on the Duras sisters. They're here because, if you remember the timing of when this came out, it made sense. They were one of the things that you bring over from TNG to kind of create that connection and create that hook, but totally irrelevant to the DS9 story. But overall, I will also keep past prologue. Okay, let's go on to the next one here. A Man Alone. It's murder! And everyone thinks Odo is behind it. When Ibudin, someone who sold drugs on the black market during the occupation, turns up dead on the station, the residents of DS9 call for Odo's head. So we get sort of it's like a lynch mob mentality aimed at Odo in this early episode. And let's also keep in mind, of course, that past prologue and A Man Alone are kind of reversed, right, in terms of production and airing of those episodes. So you could almost lump them together here as episodes that set up things early. How do you feel about this one?
You know, I had to go back and research this one a little bit to see some of the things that do happen in it. And I think that this is an episode that is essential for Deep Space Nine. And the reasons are because they do give us some background and some understanding of the character of Odo. And they also further the understanding and the history of the relationship between Dax and Cisco, which I found really interesting. And, you know, it gives you the opportunity to know a little bit deeper his relationship with Curzon and his struggle to kind of form a new bond with this new Dax, who, you know, is not an old man anymore, but a hot young woman. I mean, it's just, which is a very strange thing. So I think all of that really makes for a good and interesting episode of the series and a furthering of character development, which is going to be very important to Deep Space Nine. So I think this is one that should be kept.
Okay. Yeah, I agree that it needs to be kept. If for nothing else, for the development of Odo, in the sense that it's kind of unusual in Star Trek up to this point to have a character who's part of the main crew that people don't necessarily trust. And so for the DS9 story, I think it's important to establish that there is something very unique about him, but also the fact that he has a past that extends on the station where they are and involves many of the people who are around him that stretches back further than what we're seeing in the story. You know, most everyone else here has been assembled together as a new crew, but here is someone, along with Quark, who is known to people here, and people already have their own feelings about them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you think about the episode now, it's pretty relevant, the whole idea of people automatically jumping to a conclusion and treating it as if it's the truth, you know. And goodness, do we not see that everywhere on like social media or anything these days?
I was going to say, I mean, we talk about sometimes how DS9 is very relevant in today's world, even though it's been so long since this stuff was written. And in many ways, it holds up better than most of the other Star Trek series in that respect. But that's one where you don't think of that first, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I think today, more than any time that I can remember anyway in my lifetime, that's exactly how people are. You know, you hear one thing on Twitter and it must be the truth. And then everybody piles on. So, yeah, good point there.
Well, that's because the axiom these days is he who is loudest is right.
Yeah, so that's very true. One thing you didn't mention is the fact that we see Miles and Keiko arguing with each other.
Oh, yeah. How could I forget? Maybe that? I just blocked that out.
That's kind of essential for Deep Space Nine, for their relationship.
That is very true. You're right. It does set up that there is a rift in the marriage early for coming to Deep Space Nine. And it's really interesting in that way because it's very true to a lot of families that deal with military postings. And that actually happens, I think, quite a bit. You know, I'm married to somebody who is in the military and is now still in the National Guard, and that is something that a lot of people face. And so I like that they actually deal with that really honestly here. Yeah. And it, you know, we joke about them and sometimes the way they're written, but they have, I think, one of the most honest marriages on television.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't know. I was joking going into that. You make some good points there. I don't know if establishing that there is friction in the relationship because of the assignment is essential to the Star Trek Deep Space Nine story here. But if you see it happening early on here, then some of the things do make more sense along the way, like the fact that Keiko's setting up the school. Why is she setting up the school? Well, because she's unhappy. Although when that happens, we get some explanation there. So I'm not sure that that part is really essential. But the Odo story definitely is. And the bits between Jadzia and Cisco, those help quite a bit as well. So I think we keep this because, again, it's an early episode that's important for setting up the season. Okay, let's go on to Babel.
Skip it.
That's very quick. You know, I think Tristan said the same thing about an episode in the Essential Voyager Season 5. That quickly. Just, or maybe Char did, so quick. But okay, Babel. When replicator repairs trigger a dormant virus planted on the station long ago by the Bajoran resistance, everyone on DS9 begins talking nonsense. Dog, fellow, distance. So, I agree with you, skip it. So, you want to go on to the next one?
World Jurassic 5. it's the reason we're skipping it is because this has been done so many times in Trek before.
Yeah.
So, you've already seen this with The Naked Now, The Naked Time. It's just, and there's nothing you learn in it. So, it's definitely not essential.
No. It's an okay episode. Like, I watch it and it's kind of cute, but it's not essential to the DS9 story at all. All right. Captive Pursuit is next. When aliens arrive from the Gamma Quadrant as part of a hunt, O'Brien sides with the hunted, who turns out to be sentient, and violates the Prime Directive as well as Sisko's orders to help the alien escape. All right. So, what do you think about Tosk?
This, I have to say, I honestly think this is one of season one's best episodes. And I think it's very essential, especially because of what we learn about O'Brien and the kind of character that he has. The relationship that he is building with Sisko by the end, where Sisko gives him the reprimand, but you can tell Sisko is also giving them the attaboy all at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's also the first time that we have anything from the Gamma Quadrant coming through, and I think that's a really great storyline, really interesting, and I love everything about this episode, and mainly just because Cole Meany just gives a fantastic performance. He's putting his heart and soul into this role already, and you just kind of fall in love with Chief O'Brien right here, right now.
Yeah, he probably does shine here the brightest for the first time in the series. But let me ask you, though, I think what we learn about his character is really important, but is it essential to DS9? If you didn't see this episode, would you then be lost as to how O'Brien is behaving later? Would you fail to see these aspects of his character in later episodes?
Maybe not, but I think for all that it does do, again, especially since this is the first time we have something come through from the Gamma Quadrant, I think that makes it an essential storyline for Deep Space Nine. And, you know, because we set up this whole, we have a link to the Gamma Quadrant in the first episode, and this is the first time they're really utilizing that and bringing us something kind of completely out of left field.
Yeah, especially those costumes being worn by the hunters.
Oh, geez. the most interesting idea of dealing with a new species that, for them, this is okay, this is normal. And yeah, the way that obviously O'Brien is projecting his values onto this character and all of that, I think makes for really interesting conversation. And again, because of that, I think it really does kind of make it essential, because that's what Deep Space Nine is going to continue to do over and over and over again. And I think this one next to Emissary is the one that really sets that precedent for Deep Space Nine is not always going to be clean and simple. We're not going to wrap it all up like a TNG bow anymore. We're going to make it a little bit grayer. And I think that's where it's the most essential, is it's really starting us off on that process. And it's going to take a while to kind of fully get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is the first time that we really realize a little bit more of what we're dealing with in Deep Space Nine.
Well, let me ask you one more question on this one, because I'm really on the fence on this one myself. I like the episode a lot. It's one of my favorite season one episodes, but I think you make a good point about it being the first time that someone comes through from the Gamma Quadrant, because that's important. That's part of the premise of the station being there once the wormhole is discovered, is that it's going to be this sort of stopover for people who are traveling. And you need people to start coming through like that, and we get it here. And, okay, so the O'Brien part, I guess I can buy into. The Sisko part as well. One important thing about Sisko's character is that we find out that he's not going to be so much the by-the-book guy that Picard was. And like you said, at the end here, when he reprimands O'Brien, but at the same time we know that he's saying, I get it. I understand what you did. I have to reprimand you, but I get it. And that's important for Sisko's character and establishing who he is. But at the same time, like I asked about O'Brien, if you didn't see that happen in this episode, would you still be fine going through DS9 and you would still get that feel for Sisko?
Possibly, but I think it would take quite a while for you to figure that out.
So this is a really clear example.
Yeah, and there aren't, I'm looking through the list just right now of the rest of the episodes for this season, and there aren't really any other episodes that clearly show that here in the first season.
Yeah, good point.
So I think we've made a good case for keeping it.
Okay, so we keep Captive Pursuit. Okay, so far we've kept four of the first five episodes. Can we keep the streak going? Well, let's find out as we look at Culis. Everyone's favorite omnipotent menace visits DS9 along with Picard's former fleeing Vash. The station almost blows up. Sisko punches Q in the face. Everyone survives. Okay, so you just said keep it while I was talking. Now, for me, this is one that's going out the airlock. So explain to me why we should keep Culis.
I think that, and this is probably going to be my wild card is my guess.
Okay.
But I think that this episode, as dumb as it is, you need to see Sisko punch Q.
Okay, so that's
you
all.
You need to see.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, you need to see him say, I'm not Picard. It is essential to see that in Deep Space, especially, you know, I would say this is essential, you know, some people will ask us, you know, if I'm watching through, can I skip certain episodes or whatever? But especially this is the first time, it's a must watch. And I will even watch this episode on all of my rewatches just because I want to see Sisko punch Q in the face.
Okay.
It's awesome.
But Matthew, the thing is that we could go in and we could take the moment where Sisko punches Q in the face and we could clip that out and then we could go to that website where you can put giant text on an animated GIF and we could just put, I'm not Picard underneath it and put it on loop and then you'd have that without the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. and I get why you don't want to keep it and it makes sense. I don't know. That scene is just so good. To me, it makes the rest of the crap of the episode kind of worth it. So,
okay. I mean, I could keep this episode because Vash is in it, and I just think that Jennifer Hetrick is a very beautiful woman, and I can watch her all day. But is this episode essential to DS9? I don't know. I'm going to have to say no on this one. I don't think it's essential to the story.
Well, I guess I'm going to hold on to my card, but I guess I've also made a pretty good case for people to watch it.
Okay.
So it might not be essential, but it's worth watching.
Okay. So let's say Culis is not essential, but you should probably watch it.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. I like it.
It's because it's really not essential to the DS9 story. If you don't watch that episode, you're not going to miss anything related to the DS9 narrative.
All right. No, you're not. Other than, you know, Sisko's a badass.
Yeah, but that was a valiant effort, Matthew. You really put up a good fight. You put up a much better fight for Culis than Q put up for himself in that episode.
That is true. That is true. He really doesn't fight back at all. But I guess, Sisko doesn't really like to humor Q the way Picard does.
That's
maybe
right.
Picard's just a glutton for punishment.
All right, let's go on to the next episode. Dax. A 30-year-old murder case is reopened, and Jadzia is put on trial for a crime allegedly committed by Curzon. Okay, keep or skip?
This is an episode to keep. Because obviously, I mean, it's called Dax, and it's the first time that we are really learning about this character and about the Trill themselves.
Yeah.
And what it's kind of like to be this joint species that has this long lifespan of memories. And just because of that alone, I think it makes it fascinating. It's interesting too, because, you know, the episode doesn't require a lot of the main character of the story. You know, Dax is very quiet throughout most of the episode and very calm. But those around her, I think it helps bring this crew together, this whole thing. They're all rallying around Dax. And so all of those things, I think, make this pretty essential to Deep Space Nine and its story. And just the overall canon of Star Trek when it comes to the characters of the Trill.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a definite keep, if for no other reason than just what we learn about Dax herself. You know, this is, we kept a man alone because of character building for Odo. We kept past prologue for character building for Kira. And neither of those even comes close to the amount of character building that we have for Jadzia in this episode. So absolutely, you have to keep Dax. All right, let's go to the next one. The Passenger. An alien criminal attempting to prolong his life hides his consciousness inside the mind of a station crew member. All right. Keep or skip The Passenger, Matthew?
I think you can skip this one.
Yeah. This one, this is an episode, you mentioned that you had to go back and research a few of these. And this is an episode for me that I've seen it probably 15 or 20 times. And still, if I'm trying to think about the storyline of The Passenger and why it's important, I still have to go back and look at the details of the episode again, because I don't see really anything that I consider essential here to the story of DS9. And so it's just one of those episodes in the middle of season one for me.
Yeah, this is definitely one that if I'm trying to do maybe a fast rewatch, I can skip it and I don't feel like I missed anything.
All right, let's go on to everyone's favorite, Move Along Home. Move along.
So let's move along.
Move along.
Keep moving. Move along.
Okay. The Wadi, a fun-loving race from the Gamma Quadrant, arrive at DS9 eager to play a game with Sisko and the crew, one that appears to be a matter of life and death. All right. So are we moving along, Matthew?
Oh, we're moving along.
Is there any redeeming value to this episode in terms of things we need to know in the DS9 story? Anything at all?
The only redeeming value of this episode is Chris, where we tried to put a cherry on top of this, you know, smoking turd of an episode by saying, well, this would have made a good original series episode.
Yes, right. And that episode of The Orb, which everyone should go listen to, please, because it was a lot of fun to record, is The Orb 43. It's called She's Really Good, but the D20s. And it's Move Along Home as a TOS episode. And believe us, it works a lot better if you replace the characters with Kirk, Spock, Bones, and the rest of the original series cast. All right, so let's skip this one, just like they do in the episode, in fact, and move on to the Negus. With the sudden death of Grand Negus Zek, Quark becomes the new leader of the Ferengi Alliance, but also becomes a target for murder. Okay, do we keep the Negus? Do we skip the Negus?
Oh, you have to keep the Negus because of, again, the same thing that's happening in the Dax episode, Dax, is happening here with the Ferengi. They are really opening up what the Ferengi are and are going to kind of be. You know, what we've seen in TNG has slowly moved them to what we get in Deep Space Nine, but this really furthers that in a whole new and funny, ridiculous, and outlandish way. And of course, it's the first time we meet Zek and understand what really the idea of the Negus in the first place with the Ferengi. So this is definitely a keeper.
Yeah, for me, the reason to keep it is because of Zek. And whether you like Zek or not, and I think a lot of people don't like Zek because he's very annoying, you still need to know who he is. You need to know what the Negus is, what that position is on Ferenginar. And you need to understand what's happening kind of at the upper echelons of government on Ferenginar, because it plays into the story so much over time. It affects Quark. It affects Quark's business. It affects Rom as well. It ties into the resolution of the entire series, so you wouldn't understand what's going on in the later seasons involving Quark and Rom if you didn't know this. And of course, it also opens up for us, because of Zek, some of those great storylines with Moogie, with Rom and Quark's mother down the road as well, which are good social commentary episodes within DS9. So you need to know who Zek is, and seeing him introduced is important because he does change over the course of the series, and you can't follow those changes in the way he thinks if you don't see him the first time he comes on. So for me, keep. Okay, so we're going to keep the Negus. All right, let's go on to Vortex. We double-double our DS9 goodness as Myrhadorn twins come aboard the station, bearing space Fabergé eggs. Meanwhile, a fugitive from the Gamma Quadrant tries to trade evidence about Odo's people for his freedom. Is Vortex essential to the DS9 story, Matthew?
This was a really hard one for me, Chris. And so I guess I'll try and argue it being essential, and then I don't know what you're going to think, but it really starts us on the journey of where does Odo come from and who are his people. And the idea here planted that he comes from the Gamma Quadrant and his people are mysterious and they're hard to find. And I like all of that. You know, I wouldn't say this is a double or pleasure, W or fun type of episode, but there are, I feel like, some essential things that get laid as a foundation for the character of Odo and his people, which we have no idea what their name is yet. And so for that, I feel like we could say that this is essential. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's all true. It's all a good point. I kind of struggle with whether it truly is essential. Do we need to find that information out about Odo right now versus later? Because it's something that they don't pick back up for quite a long time. It's not really until we get late into season 2 and the Jim Hadar come around, and then we do the search and Odo wants to go to the Gamma Quadrant because he thinks that his people might be there. You know, that information is coming to him bit by bit, and here's where we get that first bit of it, the implication that his people might be there. But I think that you could skip this episode and you still would not be lost about that part of the story later on. What do you think?
It's a tough call. I feel like it's on the border, you know, and they're not serving nachos, unfortunately. So I think, I don't know, if we're erring on the side of what is essential, especially to characters, it's a good start for those, mm-hmm. you know, crumbs that Odo is going to be following. So I don't know. I'm really tempted to say keep it because I'm having a hard time saying that it's not worth you watching for the storyline of Deep Space Nine.
Okay. But then I think about the fact that it's not until the search that we find out that Odo was one of the 100 changelings that were sent out. And that's really kind of the key. So it's kind of cool to find out that, oh, maybe he's from the Gamma Quadrant, and maybe there are other people there. But then we find out later on more information about that and the details that are necessary for it to actually be concrete in our minds and a concrete part of the character. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm really on the fence on this one as well. Like, it's borderline, mm-hmm. like you said.
Maybe we could call it another one, like, it's not essential, but we feel like you probably should watch it.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, we put that on the borderline.
Okay. Kind of like Madonna.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Probably, yeah.
So we're going to write it down as skip, but you should watch it, or do we want to use an option card on this one?
Yeah, I think this is a good option card.
All right. So you're going to use your
option
card?
Yeah, I definitely think this is a good option card.
Okay. Matthew's option card goes to Vortex. All right. Let's go on to the next one then. Battle Lines. Sisko, Kira, and Bashir take Kai Opaka on a joyride through the wormhole aboard the Yangtze Kiang, but crash on a planet in the Gamma Quadrant. There they find two races who are eternally at war, because they can never die. Caught in the fight, Opaka is killed. Essential? Not essential.
Well, I think this is essential just because it's what happens to Opaka, who we met in Emissary, and, you know, character-wise, it wraps that up. But it also sets up the fact that she's gone, and therefore there's going to be a need for a new Kai, which is going to create all of the drama that we get in Season 2 with the Bajorans and the upheaval with their religion and, of course, with the Circle and all of those things. So I feel like this, you have to have battle lines because it sets all of that up.
Definitely, yeah. I totally agree on those points. And for those reasons alone, it's definitely a keeper. The other thing about this episode that I think is important is that it gives us some good insight into how Kira thinks and the importance of Kira's religion, her spirituality, the importance of Kai Opaka herself as sort of a mentor, or at least, you know, someone who Kira looks up to and sees as very important, you know, to her and to the Bajoran people. And that was great insight into Kira that I think is important for understanding Kira's character along the way. It might not be that little bit there with Kira alone might not be essential. And if that were the only thing, then I might say you could skip this because you're going to get that later with her as well. But given that we're keeping it for the fact that Opaka is gone, and the most important part about that is what you said, that it opens up, it creates this vacuum and it opens up the opportunity for Wynn to take power, which of course changes the entire nature of the series. All right, so we're keeping battle lines. Let's go to the storyteller. Chief O'Brien is appointed spiritual leader of a Bajoran village and must defend the village from a mythical energy creature known as the Dal Rock. Meanwhile, Nog and Jake try to help their new friend settle a struggle between two Bajoran villages. Okay, so the key part of the story, of course, is the O'Brien part and the Dal Rock. But is it essential?
I am going to say it is essential, and it's because it's the beginning of the bromance with O'Brien and Bashir.
Okay.
And their back and forth really gets going here in this episode that will lead to them becoming friends. Like, it really does that. I just, every time I think about this episode, that's what I think about, is it being kind of the first time that they spend any quality time together. And, you know, at this point, Julian is still driving Miles up the wall, but that's really an important part of the rest of their story. And it makes for a very, you know, it makes for a fun episode. So it's a fun essential. You know, it's not like, oh, we need it for really dour reasons. No, this is a ridiculously ridiculous episode.
Ridiculously ridiculous.
Yeah. But it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
And it's because of those two going at it with each other.
Okay. All right. See, going into this, I had the storyteller on my skip list. I was going to throw this one out. But yeah, pointing out the beginning of the Miles-Jules bromance, that's important. And I guess I'll let that be enough for me to keep this one. This episode for me has been, it's an okay episode, and I always watch it. But it is one of those episodes when I talk about how DS9 Season 1 still feels very TNG-like. This is one of those episodes where, you know, I could see this story being done on TNG instead of DS9. And I don't think that it would work any less well there than it does on DS9.
Well, yeah. Although here they allow it to still be mystical. And on TNG, they would have explained away.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So this does change that format, and it fits very much within the Bajoran sense of spirituality. And of course, later on, I believe it's through the books that we actually learn that that's a piece of it's a shard of an orb, and therefore you know, I don't know, all the storytelling possibilities, but just the way that they dealt with the story, it had some TNG elements, and yet they put the Deep Space Nine formula in there, which was to say, you know, spirituality is not something we need to tell people to stop doing.
Okay, that's a really good point. So I'm going to then argue in favor of keeping it by saying that it's important because it establishes that DS9 is going to allow the Bajorans to be spiritual. And Bajoran spirituality is really important to making the rest of the series work. There are many, many things in this series that only work because the writers are going to allow that mysticism and that spirituality to exist, and they're not going to try to explain it all away by taking the tech or sciencing the science.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we're going to keep the storyteller. Okay, let's go to the next one. Progress. Kira leads the evacuation of a moon, which is being converted into a massive power plant that will render the entire surface uninhabitable. But an old farmer refuses to leave. Back on the station, Jake and Nog set out to turn an inordinate amount of seemingly worthless condiments into profit. All right, what do you think about this one?
Oh my gosh, is this a keeper? you know, this is such a great story for Kira. And the struggle, you know, of progress, you know, in the face of traditionalism, and that there are sometimes for things that you can let go of for the greater good. And, you know, all of those questions are circling around this episode, and it makes it classic Star Trek, you know, asking a big question to which there may or may not always be sufficiently satisfactory answers for everyone, you know, and I really like that. It is fun on the other side with Jake and Nog becoming closer and closer friends.
And self-sealing stem bolts.
Yeah, exactly. So what that adds to Star Trek is just huge, but it really is the Kira storyline that is the big storyline here.
Well, if you needed one additional push to make this a keeper beyond the Kira storyline, could I convince you by saying that it's essential to the Morn storyline because we find out that he asked Jadzia out?
Done. Sold. Keep it. Yeah. Morn is essential to Deep Space Nine in every way possible. So,
plus, this gives us the No-J Consortium, which, as you'll remember from an episode of The Orb long ago, is in a battle of the bands with the Dal Rock.
Yeah.
So this episode, as well as the storyteller, are essential orb.
Well, and yes, they are essential orb. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to keep this one. Yeah, I agree with you on the Kira part and don't really have anything profound to add to what you already said because I think we're in agreement there. Let's go on to the next episode. If Wishes Were Horses. As Rumpelstiltskin appears in Molly's bedroom and Jadzia shows an interest in Bashir, the station's residents suddenly find that their imaginations are manifested in physical form. They must figure out what is going on while at the same time stopping a spatial rift that threatens to destroy the entire Bajoran system. Okay, Matthew. Now, I think we both really like this episode, but is it essential DS9?
It is not essential. It is an episode that you can skip. I would say that this is one of those episodes that, as you said, we both like. So we would say go ahead and watch it, but it's not essential.
Right.
And it's very TNG.
It's very TNG.
This is classic TNG right here.
Or it could even have been a TOS episode.
Yes. I could totally see Kirk running into Rumpelstiltskin.
But not essential DS9 at all. So let's skip it. But do watch it because it's a really fun episode.
Yes, do watch it.
All right, let's go on to The Forsaken. Lwaxana Troi comes aboard DS9 while an alien computer virus wreaks havoc with the station's systems. Trapped in a turbolift together, Odo and Lwaxana reveal deep secrets about their real selves.
I think you just, the summary right there is why we keep it.
Well, you know, for me, I think this may be the best Lwaxana episode in all of Star Trek.
Yeah, I would agree. And you're right. This does more to make her character sympathetic than anything that happened in TNG, where obviously she would come on the ship and just annoy her daughter to death and then leave. Yeah.
And not just sympathetic, but real.
Yes.
Like a real person, well, not just a caricature of somebody who, you know, is this royalty.
Well, and she also helped open Odo up, and Odo felt comfortable to share with her things that he had never shared with anybody else. So, again, it's one of those things. It turns out, I mean, when you read that definition, you know, that what this episode is, you're kind of like, really? But when you're watching it, you're realizing, no, this is good character work for the first time with a character that has been on TNG quite a few times. Yeah. Here you're kind of like, why didn't they ever write her like this before?
Yeah, and not only was she on TNG, but the actress, Majel Barrett, was on Star Trek from the beginning. And I think this is possibly her best acting performance as well.
Mm. Yeah, totally worth watching. Yeah. This is a keeper.
Now, this is one of those where, is it essential to DS9? Or are we keeping it just because it's such a good episode that we just can't throw it out?
I think it is essential because without this setup between her and Odo, some other storylines can't happen.
Okay. That's true.
Especially later on, you know, where she comes and she's pregnant, you know, and Odo marries her.
Okay.
That storyline couldn't happen. And again, I think the character growth that we do get for Odo and what we find out about him here is kind of important. The fact that he does have to regenerate so many times a day in every 16 hours.
And that plays into future storylines as well. Where
exactly.
And let's not forget, Matthew, without this, that wonderful entry in the Slings and Arrows book series could not have happened either.
Oh, so true. So true. Let's hope that does not... Never mind. Anyway...
All right. Okay, so we're going to keep that. So let's go on to Dramatis Personae. And the crew are not themselves as they become infected by a telepathic imprint of a culture that destroyed itself. A power struggle between two sides that began long ago continues to play out through the bodies of Sisko and the DS9 crew.
Blah, blah, blah. Skip it.
Yeah, this episode is definitely a skip for me. And it's one of those episodes where it seems like every series does this, where we're going to take our characters and we're going to make them not act like themselves, but we're going to do it really early in the series when we have not yet established our characters in the first place. TNG does it with the Naked Nell. The original series does it with the Naked Time. Stop doing it, people. Stop doing it already. Do this episode halfway through the series when we really know our characters really, really well, and then we can understand more about why they're behaving certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we're skipping that one. Duet. After a Cardassian man arrives on the station suffering from an illness that he could only have contracted at a Bajoran labor camp during the occupation, Major Kira leads an investigation to determine whether he is actually a notorious war criminal, as he claims.
There's only two words. Keep it.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, this episode is completely essential, DS9. It's essential for Kira and the way her character is evolving and the way her character will behave in future episodes. It's essential for the background information that it gives us about the Cardassian occupation. It's essential because of the fact that this is a turning point for the tone of the series itself. And you can see a clear distinction between what came before, for the most part, and what comes after, for the most part.
And I have to say, you know, the acting performance by Nana Visitor and Harris Yulin is just fantastic. I mean, those two going back and forth it's riveting. And I mean, this is a bottle episode to the T, but it is as good as any Star Trek bottle episode.
Well, often the bottle episodes are the best. When you give material like this, which could be a stage play, and it's a bottle episode, not purely like, let's save money, but just because that's what the material calls for.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And also about the tone, the way it ends sets the tone for DS9 as well. Again, it's that like, sure, you're forgiven, but you're still going to get killed by someone else who didn't forgive you. And, you know, that's how the world is. And that sets a unique tone for the series. Okay, well, we have one episode left in season one. The season one finale, In the Hands of the Prophets. Orthodox Bajorans, led by Vedic Wynn, object to secular teachings about the wormhole in Keiko O'Brien's school, causing tensions between fundamentalists and the Starfleet crew that threaten the future of relations between Bajor and the Federation.
Chris, you know what I don't object to? Is keeping this episode. I mean, we've said it so many times, but this is really where I think Deep Space Nine shows all of the colors of Deep Space Nine. You know, all the colors of the wind. It's exactly what Deep Space Nine is going to continue to do as it gets better and better every season, is to challenge the status quo of Star Trek and to the type of questions that it would ask. So, you know, the frustration in the episode is that both sides are so badly represented in their arguments and so polarized, but it's just as applicable today as it ever was. So this is a keeper.
And not only that, but another reason this is essential DS9 is that this is the first appearance of Wynn. This is the first time we ever see Vedic Wynn, who will become Kai Wynn. And try to picture the DS9 story without Wynn. You can't.
Well, I mean, and on top of that, Chris, this is another fantastic Keiko episode.
Yeah.
And try to imagine Deep Space Nine without Keiko.
I thought you were going to say, try to imagine DS9 without one fantastic Keiko episode.
Oh, I can. I can.
Yeah, I think the introduction of Wynn is absolutely essential, but the tone that it sets is great too. And again, it's that, you know, Duet sort of set things up, and then In the Hands of the Prophets hit the home run to end the season. And it shows that DS9's not going to tell you what's right or wrong. They're going to present things for you like we always talk about on here. I know it sounds like we're beating a dead horse, but it's true. They're going to give you both sides, and they're not going to definitively say which is right or wrong. They're going to present both. And in this case, I mean, you would expect from Star Trek that Keiko's side would be the side that wins out in the end because it's the scientific side. But that's not what happens here, because we need the Bajoran spirituality and the Bajoran mysticism to make the series and the storylines work.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And for what it does with Deep Space Nine, and I think that's where it continues on the trend that we talked about a little bit with the storyteller, where Deep Space Nine is saying, no, we are going to stop persecuting those of faith and saying, you're dumb for believing this, believe this, because we're the right ones, and say something else. And what they're going to say is that, no, religious belief is valid. So that's a huge step for Star Trek, and one of the reasons why, for me personally, I love the show so much. And, you know, it also sets up for being able to dive later on in the series to the mythology of the Bajorans, which is going to create a show which has a much more mythic quality than anything Star Trek has ever done before. And that is what makes this show so unique.
So I did not use my option card, Matthew, and I don't know if I should go back and apply it to anything or not. So let's recap what we decided here. Emissary, keep. Past prologue, keep. A Man Alone, keep. Babel, skip. Should I apply my card to Babel?
No.
Captive Pursuit, keep. Cueless, skip. Are you going to steal my card and put it on Cueless?
Actually, Chris, I was gonna say that maybe you should take that card and put it on If Wishes Were Horses, because we both have such strong feelings about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, well, let's go on through the list a little bit more. Dax, keep. The passenger, skip. Move along home, skip. The Negus, keep. Vortex, that's your option card. Battle lines, keep. The storyteller, keep. Progress, keep. If wishes were horses, skip. The Forsaken, keep. Dramatis Personae, skip. Duet, keep. And the Hands of the Prophets, keep. Okay, Matthew, as I was going through those, I was thinking in my head there, and I am going to play my option card on If Wishes Were Horses. But,
all right.
But it's not because I really like the episode. There's one really important thing that happens in this episode. We are introduced to one new character that's important throughout the series in this episode.
Who is it, Chris?
It's Cisco's baseball.
Oh, yeah.
This is where he gets
the
baseball.
That's right. That is right. Oh, my goodness. How did we forget that in the first place? We could have just argued to keep it because of that.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it before when we've talked about the episode, but we didn't think about it today. And so, I mean, I don't think that alone is enough to make it a definitive keep, because the overall episode is certainly not essential. But that one point is very essential. So I will at least play my option card on it.
Well, and I will argue back and say that it is essential, because we're going to go back into this. It is essential because that baseball will play so prominently in the rest of the series, especially when you think of when we did the whole season 6 arc, where Cisco leaves the baseball there when they, you know, have to flee Deep Space Nine, and it plays a huge part with him and Dukat, the mind game there. Yep. And then, of course, when he hands back the baseball after they get Deep Space Nine back. Yep. So I don't know. I think that baseball might be one of the most important parts of this show.
Right. It's a key character. But I will argue back on that one, that do you need to know where he got the baseball? Or do you just need to know that he has a baseball that he keeps on his desk?
You don't have to know where he got the baseball, but the baseball hadn't been introduced until this episode.
Okay.
And
but I think if you see,
would they have introduced it later on? I don't know.
But I think if you see a baseball sitting on his desk in future episodes, you kind of become accustomed to the fact that he has it. And we already know he likes baseball because of Emissary. So I'm still going to argue that this should be an option, not necessarily a key.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll let it slide this time, but yeah.
Okay. So given that, Matthew, we have two optional ones, which we're not going to count in our percentage. If Wishes Were Horses from me, Vortex from you. So that leaves 17 episodes in season one. We kept 12 of those and we skipped 5 of those as not being essential to DS9. So that's 71% of the episodes from season one that we've kept.
It's a pretty good percentage,
actually,
I think.
Actually a pretty high percentage. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine that if you were doing like TNG season one?
Yeah, right.
What's essential?
Probably. It's actually higher than I was expecting, though. Going into this, I was thinking we might throw out a few more season one episodes than we did. It's going to be interesting as we get deeper into the series, when we get to like season 5 and season 6, how are we going to determine that you skip certain episodes given the serialized nature of this show?
I don't know. I can think of some in season 6 right now.
Well, I thought of two of them this morning too. And in fact, they aired back to back. So, all right. Well, there we go. That's Essential DS9 season 1. Let us know what you think about our picks. Let us know if you would keep some we didn't, if you would skip some that we decided not to skip. You can do that in the Babel Conference. That's the best place to do it. So Matthew, tell everyone how to get there.
Well, the Babel Conference is our listeners-only discussion group there on Facebook. If you go to Facebook, just type in Babel in that search field there, and you'll find us, and we'll let you in. And then, of course, if you're on our website at trek.fm, you can click discussion on the menu bar on the show page there, and that will also bring you to the listeners-only discussion group.
And also on newer posts, and we're going to be going back and doing this to all the episodes, but there's a discussion link underneath the streaming player on the show pages as well. And if you click that, that'll take you there too. So another way for you to get there now. Okay, so yeah, let us know what you think about the episodes. We'd love to hear what you consider your Essential DS9, but Essential DS9 isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
With Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Uhura, Chekov, Scotty, Sulu, and the Enterprise, that is your crew. That is the family of the original series. And yes, we would like to see that maintained and protected and treated with reverence.
Earl Grey.
Geordi is the one that's like, you know what? No, you're wrong. You're wrong about Data.
I'm going to drop a challenge right here, and Data's totally going to step up to the plate. And you're going to get served, Plasky.
And that's how LaForge created Moriarty.
I'm not saying it turned out good, but I mean, he had good intentions.
To the journey!
Wow.
Part of me is going, wow, this is really good. Another part of me is going, really? Like, this is what you spend your time on?
I kind of wish that we could use the whole time that we allot for our podcast for you to read this synopsis, because I really enjoyed story time with Tristan.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And I can see, you know, Abrams recognizing that talent and being like, you know what? I know that you can make a good movie here. You know, I'm not convinced that I can yet, but I think that you can, and I'm going to learn from you, too, so that one day I can make a Star Wars movie.
The 602 Club.
How do these kids work for you, especially in this first movie?
It's amazing when you look back on how far they've come and the chemistry that they had right off the bat, because from the word go, when they were on the Hogwarts Express all at the same time, that's really when it took off. That's really when the movie took off for me. Literary Treks.
I was given a couple of mandates for Rough Beasts of Empire, one of which was, of course, jump the story ahead 4 years. Another was get Sisko back on a starship and also have Spock in the story.
Women at Warp.
You can always count on DC Fontana to Vulcan things up, and I for one, appreciate her for that.
Get Vulcan with it. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Get Vulcan with it.
Meta Trex.
Don't tell me you haven't wondered what it's like to be Patrick Stewart.
Actually, I've wondered. I've often wondered what it's like to be the Shat.
There's no way to know. It's one of a kind.
He's one of a kind. He's one of a kind.
Melodic Treks.
But it's basically from a motivation of not treating the audience stupid. You know, treating them that they have dreams, they have imagination, they have hope, they have fear. They have all those things, and the music plays on them.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find them everywhere that you get your podcasts. Just search for Trek.fm, whether that's in iTunes or a third-party app or Stitcher, TuneIn, BlackBerry, Windows Phone. Go to SoundCloud, we're over there. And of course, you can go to the website and stream from the pages there or download the MP3 files. Check them all out. If you're on iTunes, please consider taking a moment and leaving a star rating and a written review for us here on The Orb or for the other shows that you listen to. We love to hear what you think about the shows, and that helps them rise up in the search results as well. It helps other fans find them when they're searching in iTunes. And if you subscribe to the master feed, don't forget to review the master feed. Many people don't do that, even though I know they subscribe to it because they've probably already done the individual shows. But that'll help the master feed rise up as well. Matthew, we also want to give a big shout out to our associate producers here on The Orb, Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp. They help us get the show out to everybody each episode. We couldn't do it without their support. And they support us through Patreon. Matthew, can you tell everyone a little bit about Patreon and why we need support and how they can do it?
Well, Chris, one, this is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, so it's a huge year for Star Trek, which means that we have the opportunity to gain so many more listeners because so many more people are probably going to be looking for Star Trek content. And to be able to do that, goodness, the shows that we have on the network, think about this. We're doing From There to Here right now, which is all of Star Trek in a podcast. We're doing 729 adventures from the Final Frontier. That takes a lot of time and a lot of effort with all of the other podcasts we're doing. So this year, especially, we need your support. It costs a lot of money with the hosting and everything we have for the website. everything that goes along with making a podcast.
Getting the files into people's hands, getting them on their apps.
Exactly, quite a lot. And so putting all that together, it takes time and effort. It takes people. And we all do this on a volunteer basis. The things that we do where we have to pay for, that we can't pay for, they come out of our pocket. And so we need your help to make sure that these great shows keep coming to you each and every week. Now, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm and you can see how you can be part of our team. We've got the patron.zone where you can go. You've got some amazing, fun, great perks that come. And of course, as well, think about this. If you're on the $15 level, Chris, you get to be in the Patreon roundtable, which is a podcast for the patrons to be able to come and talk about their favorite things in Star Trek, what's going on in Star Trek. It's great. So we want you to be part of our team and to help us out. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm and you can find out all the details.
Yeah. And Patreon is patreon.com. So patreon.com/trekfm. And we really do need your help. And as Matthew said, the money will come out of our pockets, and a lot of it already does. It's an amount of money that without listener support, the network will actually go away because we can't personally, you know, a few of us fund it all anymore. It's grown to be too big. So we hope you'll support us there. And we really, really appreciate everyone who supports us there. It's just wonderful that you guys care enough about what we produce to do that. It means a whole lot to us. Okay, well, Matthew, when you're not trying to figure out how we can make an argument to keep Move Along Home, where can people find you?
Well, gosh, I'm doing that on Twitter at MattRushing02. I take pictures of it on Instagram at MRushing, so you're going to want to check that out. I'm also doing Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We're interviewing the authors. It's a great year there with the Trek books already. Amazing interviews so far with David R. George III about Deep Space Nine, Kirsten Beyer about Voyager, more coming, so be sure to check us out. You can also find me doing the 602 Club on the network, where we do a show about all things geeky that don't have to do with Star Trek, because we all have passions outside of Star Trek, and we wanted a place to talk about that. So come on over to the 602 Club. Ruby will get you a drink. We'll have a great time talking about everything from old to new, borrowed, blue, whatever. We're talking about it. Luckily, no Andorians show up, because fight scenes in Ruby's club, she didn't like that. You can also find me on a brand new podcast I'm doing with John Mills called Aggressive Negotiations. You can find us on iTunes under Aggressive Negotiations or our website at aggressivenegotiations.squarespace.com. Now, Chris, when you're not hanging around with Morn trying to get free drinks from Quark, where can we find you?
Oh, I'm asking Morn for tips on how to ask out the ladies.
He always seems to have some hottie on him. I don't get it.
He does, doesn't he?
He must have really good jokes.
I guess, yeah, probably so. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing several shows. There's The Ready Room, where we talk news and all five live-action Star Trek series. We just recorded a new original series episode yesterday with Larry Nemechek. That'll be coming out around the same time as this orb. You can also find me doing the daily news show Hyperchannel. That's Monday through Friday. And from time to time, I'll pop up on From There to Here, our 50th anniversary rewatch show, at least if Brandon Mutala will let me on, since he's doing almost all of them himself, I think. Just kidding, Brandon, we appreciate it. But Brandon is doing many, many of those. So those are places you can find me on the network. You can also find my writing about Star Trek on the official website at StarTrek.com. And then I have a non-Trek podcast called Metropolis On Air, which is all about life in Tokyo and arts and entertainment and things like that. You can find that in iTunes. Just search Metropolis On Air. Or the website is MetropolisJapan.com. And search for podcast on there and it will come right on up. If you want to find me on Twitter, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my name on Facebook as well, pretty much everywhere. And you can also catch me there in the Babel Conference on Facebook. And if you want to reach the network in general, if you want to send a message to both Matthew and me about the orb, you can do that at trek.fm/contact. Select to send to a show and choose the orb, and then that'll come to us by email. Or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm, and you can send us a voicemail as well using the mic on your computer or your smartphone or your tablet. Very easy to do there.
We want to thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.